Welcome to this brand new episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. This podcast is hosted by Mark van Horik and myself, Elias Krum. We're both from Marketing Guys in the Netherlands.
Today we're going to talk about one of my favorite subjects, being the sales and marketing alignment. Together with Mark, we share some experience in this field. We're going to talk about how these marketing qualified sales can be followed up by sales in a useful way. So Mark, can you share some of your experiences that you had recently with customers with our own approach on sales and marketing alignment? First of all, what is sales and marketing alignment?
Oh gosh, yeah, well, sales and marketing alignment is of course a very nice expensive word. But basically, it's like a harmony pact between sales and marketing. We're both in this whole thing together, and we're all in service for the customer. So the better that we cooperate, being sales and marketing, the better it is for the customer, and everything that's good for the customer is good for the organization.
So in the old days, good old days, we had a marketing and a sales department with like a brick wall in between, where marketing would generate leads, the best leads, hand them over through that wall or over that wall to sales, and sales would say those leads suck, they are poor quality, and marketing would complain that all the good leads they delivered were followed up very poorly, that's in a nice way of saying it, very poorly, by sales. So you would usually have not that harmony, and nowadays you need that harmony between those departments.
Yes, because if there isn't that harmony, you will harm yourself as an organization. In the good old days, where all the information was actually within the organization and the customer did not have much other ways to get this information, yeah, the power was at the seller.
So to achieve this harmony between those departments, we're talking about sales and marketing alignment. So what would be? Well, first of all, I think we should start with some definitions, because we can very easily talk about all those terms that we use in marketing automation. So first of all, I think we need to set explain some definitions, like MQL, a marketing qualified lead, sales qualified lead, lead scoring, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, those are terms that we use in the whole marketing automation business, and the whole idea is that marketing nurtures, communicates with a lead, and accompanies this lead as good as possible, as informative as possible in their buyer journey, so that one moment they are ready, we call that sales ready, for a salesperson to take over. And basically when we've done all our work as marketeers, we've qualified them, and we say, well, we think that they're good, and then there's a handover to sales. But there's always a different interpretation between marketing and sales.
It used to be, so when you're aligning your marketing and sales, there needs to be a way of communicating together on what quality the leads should be when handed over. So that's where lead scoring also comes in. Also the BANT principle, which we'll discuss later on. So budget, authority, need, and time frame. So first of all, there needs to be understanding on both sides of the brick wall that what the quality of the leads should be. So marketing and sales should talk together, lay out, maybe they need to define it in a document on which quality the lead should have. So how do you measure that quality, Mark?
Well, basically the quantification of a lead or a buying process. We use lead scoring for that part. And that's one of the most difficult parts of the whole marketing automation, because it's a quantification of a buying signal. And by adding these scoring points to all kinds of behavior or profile characteristics or
engagement.
Engagement or the content or all these kinds, you quantify that, and that's your interpretation. But your interpretation can be wrong, and that's most likely that will be wrong. Who is the person, besides the customer itself, himself or herself? That's the salesperson. So when marketing provides sales with contacts, what we would call qualified or sales-ready leads, sales has to qualify themselves and make them SQLs, sales-qualified leads. There could be a misfit on that part of interpretation. Mm-hmm. Instead of pointing to each other from, hey, you're not providing me with the right leads, or hey, you're not following up these leads in the right way, you communicate with each other and say, I've talked to this person, but based on these behaviors and so, this is not really a sales qualified lead. Oh, so we have given too much points for a certain behavior.
Mark, sorry for interrupting, but I'd like to, you know me, I'm very practical. Mm. So I'd like to have a practical example or to give a practical example. You're mentioning lead scoring, and lead scoring is built up out of profile data combined with behavioral data. So if you have profile data, which could be, this is a gender, male, female, could be a budget which is filled in a form. It could be something out of your CRM, but basically that profile data is fields that are filled in by the customer either in a CRM or online, right?
That's yes, the profile. Yes, a form, yeah.
So a profile could be a job function. It could be the size of a company. It could be your budget. It could be a geographical area whatsoever. So that profile data is pretty hard data. Sales and marketing usually have an understanding, for example, on the budget that it needs to be available in order to make this a valuable prospect. So that's the first aspect of lead scoring, profile data. But the second one is more difficult, as you're referring to later before, is the behavioral data. And behavioral data goes as far as behavior on the website, so which pages are being visited by the prospect. Is the pricing page the home page? Could it be your personnel page or your about us page? But it's not only that, it's clicking behavior in your social updates. It could be the words that are being used in Google Ads. So if someone Googles on those specific words, clicks on your ad, comes into your website, that specific keyword or combinations of keywords could be given through and could be also taken into account to when you're applying lead scoring. It could also be filled in forms. It could be engagement in videos. So how long has someone watched your videos on your website? And that's a difficult process, because that's something you'll have to build up, build your experience with. And we have a handbook on lead scoring on our website. I'll put it in the show notes. But lead scoring, specifically on that behavioral part, is pretty hard.
It's a constant process. And it's also it's a whole optimization part. And therefore, it's so important that sales and marketing communicate about that. That sales gives feedback based on the first ideas that marketing sales had of the value of a certain behavior. For instance, you could give points for people who visit a generic web page. But if you do that and somebody's lost on the website, they could generate maybe 20 points based on that they've lost the way on the website. Right. So that would not be a good lead scoring point. Whilst if you make some things much more specific, if you say if somebody is visiting the pricing page or the terms and condition page, you only will look at certain pages if you're further in your journey.
Right, and you would also deduct points when someone visits the vacancy pages. So if you have lots of jobs on there, you could also deduct people or give minus points, so to say, to people that are basically looking for a job. Because people that are looking for a job or will apply with you, behavioral wise, look a lot like leads, because they will investigate your whole website. They look like a hot lead, but in fact they are someone that will be applying for a job or is already applying for a job. So the lead scoring, very practical. We usually use a lead scoring between 0 and 100 points, and between 0 and 75 points, it's a marketing qualified lead. Between 75 or over, between 75 and 100, maybe sometimes over 100 points, someone becomes a sales qualified lead. And that's also where the sales and marketing alignment in systems is, because a marketing qualified lead usually is being treated very well in your marketing automation system. So that could be Marketo or Acton or HubSpot or NetResults or whatsoever. So that's not in your CRM yet. The moment someone becomes a sales qualified lead, it automatically gets updated through an API or integration to your CRM. And that's where sales comes in. So that sales lead only pops up when it's over 75 points in your CRM system. You need to have your CRM integrated with your marketing automation here in order to have that sales and marketing alignment, but also to have a closed loop reporting, because that's the only way you'll have your opportunities and also revenues reported, because that's something that's being treated in CRM and not in marketing automation. So when your marketing qualified lead becomes a sales qualified lead and it's handed over to sales through a CRM solution, what the next step is to have a very tight sales process, because without a process, this is not gonna work. The process that we see working here is that you need to have a clear understanding of acceptance at sales. So sales needs to accept that lead within a specific time frame. So it could be 1 or 2 working days. They should check the lead, and if it's a viable lead, they need to accept it. So once it's accepted, they will start nurturing it from a sales perspective. So they'll start to engage with the customer. I'll come to that later. But when it's not accepted, you need to have another marketing program in place. So what could that look like, Mark?
Yeah, that's an interesting part. I would like to compare that with a boiling egg. A boiling egg. Well, what I mean with a boiling egg is that if you say that a 1 in a minute half time, that's the best, that will provide the best boiled egg. And if I would provide you with a boiled egg that's only 1 minute and 20 seconds, what would you do? It's 10 seconds short. Would you throw it away or would you put it back for another 10 seconds? That's the analogy for if I provide a marketing qualified lead and in the sales says, well, this person is not ready yet. What do? You don't leave them. No, bring them back in the process of the marketing. And we call that, with a beautiful word, re-nurture them.
So re-nurturing within 48 hours, a non-accepted lead by sales, means that you'll have a automated program or nurturing program in place. So in practice, this means that it could be something that is indicated in the CRM in a field by the sales person, says it's not accepted, needs to be re-nurtured. But on the marketing side, this means that you'll need to have a program in place. So don't push them on a big list or whatsoever, the newsletter list. Make sure you'll have a lead re-nurturing program there. Those eggs need to be boiled 10 seconds longer,
yeah,
as you're referring to, and that's the same what happens online. A customer that is not accepted or prospect that is not accepted by sales doesn't mean that it's a lost prospect.
Yeah, and I wouldn't just confine it to not accepted. How many times do you want to reach out to a contact, to a prospect, and you are not able to contact them?
Right, so there needs to be a tight process there as well. And that's very, unpleasant to salespeople, yeah, because salespeople tend to be not very process driven. The good salespersons are, but they need to be in a very tight process when you're applying this to hundreds of leads. So my experience with sales is that this is usually pretty hard to introduce, but once they start to get it and once they start to see the results, this really pays off. So if you look at the good salespeople, they will have sales processes in place. So you need to have a process in place which is very pragmatic, which means, hey, you get this sales accepted lead into your CRM. This means the first day in the morning, I'll give them a call. If they don't respond, I'll give them another call next day in the afternoon. I'll also shoot an email. So, and once I have reached out to them, I'll try 5 or 6 times on different times in a tight program. And if you cannot reach them, if you cannot make a sales call, or you can't set an appointment or whatsoever, you'll also have to put them back to marketing and send them in a nurturing flow again. So if you can't reach them within the first 2 weeks, 10 days to 2 weeks, these leads need to be in a new program at marketing.
Yes, and there are various examples that this whole re-nurture process is a great thing. Another practical example, you've got this prospect, is quite interested, but then they reply, I'm interested, but I haven't got the budget this year. So I'm interested, but let's get in touch in 6 months' time. Well, the salesperson says, okay, I'll put in my diary or in the CRM, contact that person within 5 or 6 months.
Right.
Yeah?
Yep.
What just look from the perspective of the communication with this prospect. Until that moment, he had all this communication with the organization, then has handed over to sales. He says, I'm interested, but not now, in 6 months. The communication falls dead for the next 5 months. So I've had all these contacts, all these touch points, and then suddenly it's silence. And within 3 months, the situation could be changed. And if you're not in his top of mind list, then most likely he could choose for another solution. So to prevent that, sales can wait 5 or 6 months, but instead of leaving him completely alone, reroute him to marketing. They'll start a re-nurturing process. And if that 6 months moment changes to 3 months, you're in that communication flow.
Right, and the question I usually get is, what do I put into those email flows? Because they were a sales ready lead. They decided not to buy, not to be ready to buy or to buy yet or whatsoever. So there will be a re-nurturing flow in that case. And in that nurturing flow, I would advise to use the Cialdini with a C, Robert Cialdini principles. So those principles can easily be found online. I'll put them in the show note as well, but the 6 principles of persuasion for Cialdini are reciprocity, scarcity, authority, consistency, consensus, and liking. So these are the principles of persuasion, and it could, for example, be that you are justifying your authority in those emails. Let's say you decided not to buy with us, in those emails, we'll start to explain you that we as a market leader have the information for you that you don't want to miss out, which is also scarcity. So if you opt out of our emails, you're going to miss this and this and this. Those principles, and I'll put a link in it on the in the show notes, can easily be applied to those renurturing flows, to those activation, reactivation flows, as we call them.
Yeah, well, these reactivation flows, it's also a combination, a mix of several other things. You can, in the marketing automation, you can also check, are there any messages that you deem as important to have? Not everybody opens all the mails. So it could be also that several emails, messages from the funnel flow process, that they have not been read. You can also add those kind of messages in. So it's reusing messages that have not been used. Combine that with those persuasion methodologies, tactics. But basically is keep in touch, provide value all the way, and now you also have time, especially if you got that input from sales. What were the things? Are there other decision-making people within the organization that is giving your contact a hard time? Is that are there other reasons why it's being postponed? If you know, and these are signals that sales can, if sales relays them to the marketing department, the marketing can take that in account. You can create segments, you can create specific information. You can provide your contact or your prospect with ammunition, persuasion ammunition, for all kinds of different people in the decision-making unit.
Right. So that those could be flows for people that early in the sales process decide not to buy. Should someone engage with a salesperson, the sales process also is very important. We're not gonna go into that complete sales process now, but depending on the industry, you'll have a sales process in which you'll have a first discovery call, then you'll have a next goal to make an offer, explain the offer, etc. In the end, a sales cycle will either end in a closed or a won or lost opportunity. So in both cases, both won and lost, you need to have flows again. So if it's a one customer, you need to have onboarding flows, welcome series, etc. So those kinds of flows, email flows, maybe social flows whatsoever, need to be put in place in your marketing automation. And should, for whatever reason, the customer become a lost customer at the end of the sales cycle, there also needs to be a program in your automation in place to re-engage with them. Because let's say you're in software business or services, usually those contracts are a year. So once you know these contracts for software or leases or whatsoever is a year, you know that after 9 months, they'll have a re-evaluation moment. So take advantage of that. Make sure that you're top of mind, that the moment they are free to leave the other service, they will evaluate and reconsider your offer. So you can give them an offer they can't refuse whatsoever. And that's all something you can do automatically in your marketing automation system. So what I'm saying here is in all the touch points in the sales cycle, so from a marketing qualified lead to sales qualified, being handed over to sales, accepted, non-accepted, open to discovery, non-open to discovery, and in the end, even lost or won cases, you need to have email and marketing programs in place in which the prospect or customer will be engaged with after that stage.
Yeah, and if you talk about won or lost, That sounds a little bit like black and white. Mm-hmm. But we all know that the world's not just black and white. There are zillions shades of gray. Mm-hmm. And that's the same here, because lost, is lost completely lost? Is that lost for this moment? Is it lost for that specific product or service? Many companies, many organizations provide multiple services and multiple products. Is it lost for one product, but could be a win for others?
Yeah, and that's where you also need to talk to sales, because we haven't touched that point yet, but in order to make this sales and marketing alignment really work, you need to have a weekly or bi-weekly meeting where marketing and sales really sit together and find out, are these leads really valuable? But also things like you're referring to is like, hey, we lost this customer for offer A, or we have customers on offer A, but they could very well be interested in offer B or C. And that's a pitfall that marketers tend to fall into, because once a customer is a customer or lost is a lost, they forget about the other opportunities, and basically they assume that the customer knows what we're selling and understands what we're selling. So that's a typical thing that Seth Godin usually has quoted once, but don't assume the customer knows what you're selling, and don't assume that they understand what you're selling. And that's something I always have to keep in mind as well, because we're in a marketing technology space which we assume everybody understands. Mm-hmm. Every time we visit people, I basically daily meet people that don't understand what I'm selling, and don't even know what we're selling. And even customers that we have don't know what we're selling. We are looking at our own website multiple times a day. Well, I would be glad if one customer looks at our website intensively as we did once a year. They don't, you know, you're just getting your invoices, you're happy with your service, and sometimes most of the times they don't even know what we're selling, what other services you're selling. So don't assume that the customer knows what you're selling, and don't assume that the customer understands what you're selling.
Yeah, well, basically, it's very, very human. Just look at yourself. How intrigued, how much information do you have from companies that you visit, and then look in the mirror and try to imagine how people are looking at your business. I think that looking in that mirror part is a very important thing. Very often we say, we're always talking, it has to be customer-centric.
Yep.
And that is like a nirvana or a utopia. Customer is important. Yes, of course, the organization is also important, because the customer is not always going to pay your salary. But if you are too much focused on organization and product and service, your side of the story, then it's very difficult for a customer to get engaged with you, because you're not talking about him, you're talking about yourself. And go to a party as somebody who's talking about himself or herself the whole time.
It's annoying.
It's annoying.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Annoying. It's boring. It's annoying. If you're friendly, you will nod your head, and in your mindset is somewhere else. If you're a little bit more straight to the point, you say, I have to go off, and you walk away. But if someone,
true. Yeah.
If someone asks questions, but how is it with you? What's your situation? Then you're doing the talking, and that's exactly what we want to know. We right. know our stuff. We need to know their stuff. And that's very difficult, but that's the way we have to go.
Just Mark, I know we're very enthusiastic about this. I want to do this on customer experience and customer support as well, as I know you do. To wrap this up, I think we see this with multiple organizations where the sales and marketing alignment is has focus. Usually, this is also put together in a SLA, so a service level agreement. So depending on if you're a formally organized organization or if you're a little looser, but our experience is that it works pretty well if you formalize the sales and marketing alignment. So write out, it doesn't have to be a thick book of alignment, but write out, draw those different processes and make checks and balances and see that it happens, because as you all know, we're very much in a daily focus. We tend to lose focus when we're very busy. So does marketing, as does sales. Make sure you have a process in place, write it out, put it on an A4 or in a diagram, and make sure you evaluate it in your sales and marketing approach. Because if sales is not following up those leads within 48 hours, it might well be that a competitor goes away with the leads and you need to find a different solution. There could be all kinds of reasons not to do this, or if the CRM system doesn't work or the lead scoring doesn't seem to work out, you know, you need to know that stuff and it needs to be in an SLA. So that's what I'd like to conclude this podcast.
Yeah, I agree. Find common ground, find common language, and communicate with each other. That's what I would say to sales and marketing.
Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe to our iTunes channel. Also, if you want to be interviewed on this podcast, or if you have any questions on marketing technology, send me an email on e.crum@marketingguys.nl. Thank you.